All right. Next, we have Peng He, who is speaking in favor. He's from Madison. And on deck is Robert Meyer, also speaking in favor. So, Robert, if you, well, wherever you decide, it's quicker to bounce up here. Is right from there to there is fine. All right, Mr. He, you may begin.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chairman Biesfeld and esteemed members of the Education Committee to allow me the opportunity to speak before the Education Committee on AB 446. My name is Peng He, and I'm not an education expert. I'm not here to talk about, you know, what's the best reading strategy or assessment to use or how funding should be used. But what I am is a father of three and someone who cares deeply for the success among students here in my community. I'm here really to share with you things I've seen and experienced over the past 10 years and what the Hmong community has really had to do to make sure their student or their child got the academic support that they need to be able to read and write and perform math at grade level here in Madison. I'm here to talk about why it's so important to make sure parents are notified in a manner that they understand how their student and their child are doing in school, whether it's a standardized test or these assessments, and the importance of providing appropriate interventions for these students as they continue on with their educational careers. In the Madison Metropolitan School District, I'll use the acronym MMSD, it took me about 5 years working with two different superintendents to get the Hmong data disaggregated out of the Asian American data. The challenges that our Hmong students were facing were being masked when these data were being compiled together because there were some Asian American groups doing really well. When I finally got the MMSD to disaggregate the Hmong data, it showed that in 2012 and 2013 school year, with the WKCS test scores, 6.8 Hmong students were proficient in reading, and only 26% proficient in math. So I handed some handouts to you, and so the handout I'm referring to is this one here on the front page. Before, I would have Hmong parents telling me that their child wasn't doing well in school, but these were all anecdotal stories because we didn't have any data to prove it. But when the data came out, it was eye-opening. It took our breath away. 9 out of 10 Hmong students not being able to be proficient in reading, or 7 out of 10 not proficient in math at grade level. What would the future hold for these young men and women? What would their future be like? Well, we have another generation of students falling between the cracks. What message are we telling these parents and these students? That they don't matter? Many of the Hmong parents told me that they knew that their child's tests, many of the Hmong parents told me they didn't know how their students were doing on these tests. But they knew they had to do something. And this prompted Hmong parents to create the Hmong Language Culture Enrichment Program using culturally and linguistically relevant teaching model. That if a child is grounded in their home language or culture, they do better in school and better in their career. If a student knows who they are, where they're from, and their culture and the language, this increases their positive self-esteem, their self-confidence, and self-pride in where they are, where they came from. Parents sold egg rolls. They volunteered to cook lunches for the students. They bought school materials as we first started this program. The Hmong Language and Culture Enrichment Program teaches Hmong students how to read and write in Hmong, how to speak in Hmong, about the history of their culture. On average, students increase their reading and writing in Hmong by 60%, and that's in 6 weeks. This is a summer program for 6 weeks. For those of you who may not know, the Hmong language is a tonal language, which means one word could be pronounced 7 different ways. And so, as you can imagine, that could be very difficult for a young person. But at the same time, if you create an environment that supports them, have teachers that look like them, they thrive and they succeed. We felt it was important to be more proactive than reactive with the data that we saw. The other challenge we saw was the lack of interventions that supported our students. Current law requires school boards and schools to provide interventions for students who show not being ready for reading readiness. When I last checked with the Madison Metropolitan School District, we have one part-time certified bilingual resource teacher, for the whole district of 900 Hmong students. One person working part-time serving 900 Hmong students. I think we can all agree that's probably not enough. Parents tell me that students don't receive any interventions. There aren't any support programs for Hmong students. If you flip the page over, you'll see from 2014 to 2019 school year data, using the MAP scores, reading proficiency pretty stagnant. It's straight across, about 34%. Math, again, stagnant, 20% proficiency for Hmong students. There's little change in these test scores, which showed parents were right. There were little interventions helping our Hmong students succeed in school. So the challenges parents shared with me, as I mentioned, not getting their test results in a language they knew so they could really understand what was going on and how the student was performing, but also the lack of interventions to support their Hmong students, clearly shown by the data that I showed you. This bill helps make sure parents are notified in a language that they're comfortable with, whether it's Hmong or Spanish, making sure that they also know how to advocate to get the interventions that their students need. Increasing literacy should be a paramount issue for everyone in the state, because that's our future of Wisconsin. It shouldn't be a partisan football being kicked around by both parties, and I'm not saying that one, blaming one over the other, but I think that we all agree that the future of Wisconsin really rests on these young men and women, and we should do whatever we can to make sure that their reading literacy is increased to where they can perform and do the work that we need them to do in this global community that we are going to be facing in the future. So I thank you for your time, and hopefully no tough questions for me.
All right, thank you for your testimony and for the statistics that were provided to us. I think that whether you can answer this or not, I'm not sure, but I'll lob it out at you, and if you can't, we have a lot of people who I would say are experts who will be testifying following you, and a lot of the Hmong children are, this is a second language. English is a second language to them. And so learning a new language, I would think, would even emphasize the importance of the science of reading as the approach to learning how to read, because you don't necessarily have those same relationships with the letters in a foreign language as you do in English, and then perhaps some of the letters might even be different, not even be just symbols of some sort. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, first I would say that whether they're Hmong students or Spanish students or students who speak multiple languages, we should see that as a, instead of a deficit model, but something positive, because we now have students or individuals who speak multiple languages. And I think that helps the student as their brain develops, be able to learn quicker and better. I think that many... Again, in the Madison School District, about 80% of Hmong students are labeled EIL, and about 76% qualify for reduced lunch. And so sometimes people think that those two relate to each other. Because they're EIL, they're poor, right? And so that's where the deficit model comes in. And so I think we, as a community, need to start looking at that as more of a positive, that folks who speak multiple languages. And also take advantage of how can we then use that to make sure students learn in a way that's appropriate for them. And so one of the strengths of our program is that culturally relevant teaching model, where we take into consideration the culture aspect of that student, making sure that the teaching style, the teaching method, both fits with the student as well as with the parents, because we recognize parents are the student's first teacher, and making sure that they feel comfortable advocating for their students in a way that is culturally responsive, right? And so I think those are things that I hope, whether it's DPI or this legislation also, or members of this committee, also consider when they're thinking about whether it's this bill or future bills also.
Right. Representative Roser and then Representative Kitchens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you coming today and giving testimony to this committee. I just wanted to clarify something that you talked about and make sure I understand. I love people that are multilingual. I think that it's just great, and I agree 100% that it's to people's benefit to learn multiple languages. When you're talking about increasing literacy, and I'm not sure exactly what your phrase was, in the language they're comfortable in. Are you promoting that we do more in the classroom to help students where English is not their primary language to shore up with that language? I'm just looking for some clarification on your understanding of how we can help students whose language is not primary English to increase their literacy.
Sure, yeah. I think one of the ways, as I mentioned, is having teachers and administrators that look like them, reflect their ethnicity, having staff who are bilingual, helping them understand whether it's, working through a problem or the reading readiness, so that if a teacher is explaining it in English and the child may not fully understand, being able to do that. But I think also having programs that help support the student in their native language also can also help benefit them as they're learning, right? I recognize that English is a language that is spoken universally, globally, and so English is very important to learn. But at the same time, supporting that child in their native language also is important too.
May I ask a follow-up question, please? And I'd like you to just understand where I'm coming from. I was a professor at UW-Eau Claire College of Nursing for a while. We had some Hmong students who were not successful in our program because I didn't teach my nursing students in Hmong. I taught my nursing students in English. And so when I tested the students that I taught, I happened to have taught pharmacology. It was not a very easy course, and I didn't make it very easy. So when I tested my students, there was a real language barrier there where sometimes a student whose language was not English didn't even understand the questions that I was asking. So how do you expect them to give a correct answer when their literacy in the language that they were being taught in was not a language that they were familiar with? And, you know, when we talk about reading is critical to future success, I don't disagree with you that there needs to be a cultural component to that, but there also needs to be the cultural component of the culture that the individual is living in. And I'm not being critical at all. I'm just telling you that for those students who were not proficient in English, it was very difficult for them to come into my nursing, and I'd say my nursing program, certainly when my nursing program was the one I taught in, because they were not proficient in English, it was very difficult for them to be successful in our program. I would have done anything I could have to have helped these students, but they could not be successful. So I guess I'm just having a hard time understanding where being proficient in another language is going to help long-term success for people who are also not proficient in the language that is the predominant language of the culture that they live in. Am I making sense to you?
You are making sense. I think for me, I think one of the things we also have to look at is that standardized test you're talking about done in a way that shows the proficiency of that student, right? And so in your example, if that Hmong nursing student was taking a written standardized test in English and their literacy wasn't up to par, they didn't pass because they weren't proficient, because they didn't know what they were doing. It was because they weren't proficient in the literacy of that test, right? So I think we can all agree that we could look about how can we change that model so that a person who may not speak English as their first language, who have shown and demonstrated their proficiency in other ways, whether it's taking the temperature and you measure it that way, are they giving a shot to a patient correctly versus just only using standardized tests. Secondly, I think more research needs to be done on if a person, let me go back. I don't know how we can measure a person's ability to speak multiple languages or being comfortable in the language and having self-confidence, self-pride in their culture and their language is measured on a test. And so how do we also measure that in our program where students who are not doing well in reading and writing in English can come to this program, learn to read and write in their language by 60% within 6 weeks, show that having a program that's culturally competent can help them increase their literacy, whether it's in Hmong or in English.
I appreciate your comments, and I you were probably going way above this bill, but it reading literacy is so important to future success, and I don't know how we do that in multiple languages when we're not doing a very good job in English. Thank you.
All right, then Representative Kitchens, and then I think he's the last question. Oh, we got Representative Witke after him then.
Yeah, and I just kind of a little on the lines of her. I wanted to understand it a little bit. So you formed a foundation to teach the Hmong kids. Were they strictly learning Hmong literacy, or English as well, or was there a correlation?
There's a correlation. So we spent half of the time that the morning teaching them how to read and write in Hmong, but we also provide academic tutoring in math and English also, because we also recognize at the end of the day, when they go back to their home school, they're going to get tested on their ability to read and write in English. And so we do both.
So you're essentially doing what the school should have been doing for those kids. You had to form a foundation.
I will take that credit if you want to give me that credit.
Well, it's credit to you, but it's discredit sort of to the school system that was necessary, I guess. But.
Thank you.
Representative Witke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your testimony. I just have one quick question because talk a lot about notifying parents and so on. And if you come from areas of the state like I do, you know that family structures sometimes aren't as clean as they should be. So you've worked with a community of people that, you know, looking at parent notifications and things like that. Did you do anything or do you have any recommendations where, let's say, the family structure may not? I've heard it termed as the bridge between school and home. So if there's, so you have to find a way to bridge that to help a student be successful. So in that vein, did you find anything that you specifically did that helped that situation? Or if not, that's fine. I just was curious.
Yeah, I'll share the example. So when we started this program, let me backtrack. So for many of our Hmong parents, they come from Laos. So educational system much different than the U.S., and so in that educational system, the belief is that when a parent sends a child to school, it is the sole responsibility of that school then to educate and maybe even discipline if needed, right? And so you come here, and that's not the case. Parents would call me and says, hey, I got a call from this high school saying that my son is missing, like not at school. I dropped him off. I saw him walk into this door. Why is the school calling me? Why are they not out looking for my child, right? And I have to explain to them, in this educational system, as a parent, you're still responsible. Even though you dropped them off, you saw them walk through the front door, and then you left, it's still your responsibility. And so when we started this program, I think parents were excited about it, and they started volunteering. And when they started volunteering, they started seeing how important it is to be active in your child's education so that they learn that advocacy plays a big role. And so for us, what really helps our school be successful is how do we get parents to be active and to be part of their child's education, right? And so by creating that space where they felt comfortable coming to, felt comfortable talking to, well, I don't call myself administrative, but folks who help run the program, teachers, they began to open their eyes about the need for that. And so I think that correlates to your question about how do we engage our parents, right, who may not be as engaged in the past. I think that a lot of that ownership goes to the school district or school administrators in that particular school because they know their community in the sense that here in Madison, we have a large Hmong community. Maybe up in Rhineland, or maybe not as big as one, but there might be more folks who work in the rural, the farming who go up there to do that. And so how do we teach or get our administrators to find ways to reach out and get parents to be more involved in that piece of it also.
Thank you. Right. I especially appreciate the line of that questioning and your response to it also, because it's always every school that I've had been blessed to serve over the years that has been paramount that parents understand the school is there to assist them in the education of their child. It's not to have it turned over to them entirely. As a parent, you still have that responsibility. And if you see things aren't working, then you need to look somewhere else, and hopefully you got options, which is what we're trying to provide here. All right, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we have Robert Meyer from Sun Prairie, and he is speaking in favor representing Ventris Learning. And after Robert, we have Donna Hetmanek.